Hey, what's going on, everyone? Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio coming back at you early in the year 2017. Hey, guys, I just want to let you know, super stoked about what's about to happen over the next several months. We here at the not only the podcast, but also checking out what we're going to be doing at Rise Together. We got some really cool things that we're about to announce. I know we mentioned on previous episodes, and I'm just so excited that we actually get to do the work that we absolutely love, and we truly believe it is a purpose in our life. So with that being stated, I really am looking forward to hear, you know, stories from other individuals as well. It's not just about our stories. We want to go ahead and encourage people to stand up and speak out with us. And if you can go to reallrisetogether.org and share your story, we would absolutely love that. That's where you're actually going to be able to find other episodes of Rise and Grind Recovery Radio as well. You can check it out in our blog section. You can go ahead and check it out in our podcast section. We also have it listed on iTunes, Stitcher. We have some of the episodes up on YouTube. You can also go ahead and get connected with our Rise Together Nation by texting 44144. Again, that is the word RISE to 44144. Just go ahead and text that, and you'll go ahead and join our Rise Together Nation, and we'll keep you in connection with what's going on, how you can get involved, what are the upcoming events, maybe if we need volunteers, maybe national advocacy measures, other resources and support that we're providing out to the communities. It's a good way just to stay in the conversation on a monthly basis. So go ahead and join today. Outside of that, we always need support for the show. We love what has happened over the last several weeks. We've had some unbelievable people over the last few weeks, even going into the new year. And we are going to continue this out over the next couple of years, but we can't do that without you. So if you want to go ahead and become a supporter, you can also do that right online. You just go to the donate section. You can donate right to Patreon and become an online fan or a supporter. And you can donate $1 a month. You can donate $2 a month or more, whatever you feel comfortable with. Just go ahead and check that out. We would really appreciate that. If you want to do it just 1 month only, that is also possible. So again, just go to weallrisetogether.org. You can support our podcast. You can give back to us, but you can also just go ahead and share the podcast via social media or with somebody that you think that could use this for support. Or maybe somebody's out there that's wanting to get involved. A lot of the episodes that I've been able to do are providing resources on how to get involved, whether that's with the organizations like Facing Addiction, Generation Found, Shatterproof, with us here at Rise Together, and a number of other, you know, programs that we're going to be talking about over the next several weeks are doing phenomenal things, and they also need your support. So go ahead and check in on those resources. Everything is included in the episode notes, so just check those out every single week. This week is going to be really cool. We have just a little bit here. You'll be able to hear an interview with one of my friends, Irina, who is heading up Choice in Recovery. Choice in Recovery is an awesome program that is spreading awareness in communities. Started out in the Colorado area and is extending throughout the nation, providing public service to help educate individuals, especially professionals, on all pathways to recovery, letting people know that there are options, and those options can help to save lives. It's going to be an excellent year for them, and I'm excited that they get a chance to be on an interview with us this week, talking about their programming, talking about how they are going out in their community, but also what type of difference is making. And also at the end of the interview, they have some asks of you and the type of support that they need. So just tune in this week with Irina and Choice in Recovery. Outside of that, please go ahead and remember that this is only one small solution. You, everyone out there that's listening to this show, you have way more power and ability to make a difference in your community. We're trying to work very hard to provide some of these resources, provide advocacy measures, teach people how to get involved, how to share their story. But everybody does have the ability to start making that difference, maybe at their home. Maybe they reach out for help in their own life. Maybe they lend out a supportive hand to those that are struggling with mental illness or addiction or anything in their life. And they start showing love and compassion in their community on a daily basis. I truly believe small acts of random kindness can truly change the world, and you can believe it too. I practice in my own life. It's made a difference in my family, in my parents' lives, in the lives of my children, and in my own recovery. All right. Thank you so much, guys. Here's the interview with Irina.
Looking to bring a positive message to your next event? Contact Air and Allies. Air and Allies specializes in bringing entertainment to recovery events, daytime music events, and family-friendly community events. Air and Allies also specializes in bringing artists who bring a positive message to reinforce a better lifestyle to events like Mile of Music. Air and Allies can also help you plan and organize your event to make it successful. To learn more about making your event successful and feature a positive message, email Air and Allies at AaronAllies@gmail.com or look for the link on this podcast.
Are you looking to prevent drug use throughout your community? Rise Together is a national movement that is helping to educate and spread awareness on mental health and addiction. After traveling 100,000 miles and speaking to over 120,000 young people in just 3 years, they currently have one of the best school speaking programs in the world. They are now available for school seminars, event speaking, motivational workshops, public panels, and even corporate trainings. Contact them now by visiting www.weallrisetogether.org.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio coming back at you this week for an awesome episode, show, amazing, fantastic effort, whatever you want to call it. You know what, guys? We're just having a blast in the studio. Super cool opportunity that we can work with Midwest Communications on this one. I know they have radio stations spreading all over the Midwest, and we just get a chance to do our podcast here in the studio up here in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And we've had some phenomenal people on the show over the last several weeks. As always, you can go the WeAllRiseTogether.org. You can check those out. Last week, we had some unbelievable opportunity to talk to Tom Coder, which was the recent chief of staff of SAMHSA. Excellent interview. Shared a little bit about what his experience was with SAMHSA, also Faces and Voices Recovery, and also extended into conversation of what he got going on next. So if you want to check that out, just go to WeAllRiseTogether.org. Also, you can check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much any platform. We shared it on social media today, and you can even go ahead and check it out on Instagram. So by all means, everybody that's been out there supporting the show, thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Can't do it without you. And today we have one of my friends, Irina, in the house. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. So I heard a rumor that you might be a little nervous to do this interview, and I think we have a really friendly audience. No reason to be nervous, but why don't we just start right there? Like, what's going on in your world today? What do you got going on?
What do I have going on today?
I mean, it's Monday, so I mean, we're just kicking this off, right?
Right. Monday starts off at the gym. That's the only way.
Yes.
No, I'm working on some of my choice recovery stuff this morning, and then around 2 o'clock I head out to work. So I did find a job to supplement myself so that I could continue running choice recovery. So it's basically bit now on choice and then head out.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, I just want to thank you. I know we're friends and we've worked together in the past, and you know, we definitely have an opportunity to continue to build a relationship, and we've been talking on a monthly basis with a couple other leaders from across the nation, and it's just been phenomenal to keep those connections. And you know, from the bottom of my heart, really, I have to thank you. I mean, even the recent monthly calls that we've had, just really been able to help build up like some of the momentum that we have going on here with some of the things that we're doing, not just with the show, but with Rise Together. And I just want to also commend you for like stepping up and saying, you know what, this Choices in Recovery, which we'll get into later, but is really important to me, and I know it's making a difference in my community, talking about all pathways to recovery, and it's an absolutely crucial conversation to have. People need to know about the options that are out there to help live, you know, in part, a better life in recovery, whatever that looks like for them. So with that being said, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Even though I'm nervous, I'm very excited to be here.
Well, that's awesome. Well, with our audience, we love to hear about like how can you get involved, what do you have going on from a professional standpoint or an advocacy level. But why don't we start off with some of the most important aspects and what makes you you? Like, how are you really dedicating your time, or how did you get to the point where that you start dedicating your time to the addiction recovery movement? What is your story? Where did you start?
Where did I start? So I'm going to try to make it a little succinct. I hopped into the community about 3 years ago. And I was in a personal and professional development program, and the last part of their curriculum had you create a community project. And so, I mean, I don't even know how much you know about this, Anthony, but I walked into that course. I was a personal trainer at the time. I had my own business, and a conversation that I had continued to have was, I'm missing out on my creative side, and I'm a writer. And, you know, personal training, like, that's my athletic piece, but it's not enough for me to be fulfilled. And when I started talking about that concept and, like, this idea of not living a full life because my creativity is not in my life, I brought up, like, the stuff that I write about. And I was talking to a woman, and I told her, you know, for me, exercise saved my life. Like, for me, exercise is what allowed me to find balance, and it kept me moving forward and just kept me going. And I mean, I, like, honestly, as dramatic as it might sound, like, it saved me from death. And I used to drink really heavy. I used to mix stuff. And the next day I'd wake up and be like, oh, my gosh, I did it again. And I would go on a run. And as long as I was, like, physically able that day, and on that run, there would be those moments of just simplicity. And I would just be breathing in. My heart rate was up. And then my heart rate would just kind of plateau. And in that moment, it was like, you know, this right here, this moment, that's enough to live for. And my, like, story is I actually found moderation, and it was all a personal thing. I never went to any kind of meetings. I didn't know moderation was a real thing. I didn't know there were groups that actually helped people moderate their drinking and stuff like that. It was just, like, my own story, and that's what it was. And so stepping into this community, it came from that conversation I was having with that woman when I told her that exercise is the thing that saved my life, and how, like, that's at least the story that I have around it. Mm-hmm. She said, right about that.
Yeah.
And so when it came down to stepping into the community, it was totally, totally tough. And because I'm extremely transparent, I'm super real about where I'm at, my struggles and stuff like that. And so I step into a community, and I'm like, I moderate. I do still drink. I'm very, very mindful about what that looks like, about when I drink, when I don't drink, what level it's taken to and stuff like that. And there was one conversation that was where choice was created, and it was with an individual in Denver, and he turned out to be a licensed professional counselor. He was a certified addictions counselor, and he also actually knew and had completed the course that I was in. So when I said, you know, I'm doing a community project in this course, he had already gone through that curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told him my story, he said, you're an alcoholic, you're delusional, when you hit your lowest low, you'll know, you're addicted to exercise, and 12 steps has been around because that's the only thing that works.
Okay, yeah.
And in that conversation, it was my, uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah.
This moment of, what if he's right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, I wasn't even up in arms around defending myself at that point, because I couldn't even get to that. I was just like, oh my God, like, what if everything he just said is right? And what if this idea of moderation is actually putting people at risk?
Yeah.
And I walked away. Luckily, I'm super, super stubborn, and I happened to be reading a book. I don't remember who it's by. It's called Beyond Addiction, and I was at a chapter where it talks about the powerlessness conversation and how for some people that works, that gives them power to attain their abstinence, and for other people, they're driven by motivation. I'm like, that's me. I'm driven by motivation. I had my own way, and I ended up researching and found all these other pathways that existed, and that's how I stepped into the community. It was just like, wow, there's a program called Moderation Management. I reached out. Oh, my gosh, there's Phoenix Multisport here in Colorado, and they're popping up nationally as well. And all of a sudden, I just started connecting the dots. And so that's where I stepped in, and I had no idea I would still be here.
Very nice. I can't even imagine. I mean, even just listening to your story, and I know you've shared it briefly in a couple different occasions, and I always thought, like, man, that would probably be a really scary world to live in at that point, where you're reaching out for help, you're looking to make some changes in your life, and then, you know, you find, you know, some resources, and then you start really believing in something like moderation management, and then it kind of, in part, got completely shot down. And now you're questioning, like, yourself, you're questioning your pathway to recovery. So for you, like, what does moderation management really mean to you as a person? Why does it work for Irina?
So I need to make sure we clarify. So moderation management is, that is a pathway that is like AA or NA or Smart Recovery, anything like that. that is a pathway that actually exists. That's a support group. I never went to moderation management. So for me, like, so I just want to make sure it's clear that I'm not talking about moderation management as the existing program, but talking about my moderation kind of from my personal experience. For me, what moderation looks like is, and even they, like, right, the people that run moderation management, I've heard it tied to mindfulness. And I would say that was the biggest thing for me. And I think being a writer actually is one of the biggest things that helped as well, is being a writer and constantly taking all the jumble that's happening in my head. I threw it on paper. I mean, I'm looking at journal entries from age 12 and reading about how alcohol is impacting my life and being like, oh my gosh, like that was age 12 and I'm writing this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, moderation is being mindful around why I'm drinking, how much I'm drinking, in what environment am I drinking, and stuff like that. And so, like, when I used to drink really heavy, I didn't drink day to day, but when I drink, I had this mentality of, like, if I have one, I get alcohol poisoning tonight. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality I lived. It was like my friends were making sure I'm on my side. My friends were making sure, like, honestly, if I started throwing up, that I'm not choking on it and stuff like that. And that was the language that I had running. Yeah. And it was not an intentional, like, suicide, but it was a numbing mechanism. Like, for me, I wasn't comfortable around people. I couldn't present, like, I was literally trying to kill a piece of my brain. And I thought if I drank enough, because that numbing sensation I had when I was, you know, under the influence, I thought if I just drank enough, then I can just kill this part of my brain that had me have those, like, uncomfortable reactions and physiological reactions to being in front of people, mm-hmm. even one-on-one or in a circle or presenting. And so when I look at moderation and, like, that mindfulness now, for me, it's like, all right, I can't drink to numb something. So if I'm going into a situation where, like, I'm about to be super uncomfortable, mm-hmm. right there, that's my decision. Cool. If I'm going to be super uncomfortable, that means I don't drink, because I have to sit in the discomfort, because I don't ever want to get to that point that I was in where alcohol was complete crutch. Alcohol was the thing that allowed me to be in front of people. And, like, when I created choice and it was a presentation, like the way that it is in the community, it is a presentation. The night before, I was just like, what the heck did I just do? Because I am literally throwing myself into these things that comes in, like, in seriously, like the seventh grade that actually led me to drink in the first place. I have to get up in front of people right now. Mm-hmm. And so being mindful and moderating is, all right, I throw myself into all of the uncomfortable situations, and I allow myself to drink when it's a thing that I'm doing for fun, when it's one beer with friends or whatever that looks like. It's like I'm not doing this because I need to anymore.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can't help but to think about the interview that I did this morning. So I was on a different podcast. I was being interviewed with the podcast, That Sober Guy Podcast, which is pretty cool. Check it out right online. Interview should come out probably next week. But we talked a lot about that, like mindfulness, well-being. We talked a little bit about personal development and self-improvement. And I can't help but to think about the verticals that you and I share. Even for me, when I first started 3 years ago, to get on stage and to talk in front of a community, whether it was a middle school or high school or a public community or a college or in front of doctors or nurses or whoever. I never spoke before once. I didn't really know what I was doing. But outside of that, like, I think back to when I was young, I kind of lived in this world of trying to accomplish a perfection in some senses. I really never felt good enough, right? So there was these self-esteem issues that we could call. And eventually, outside of the trauma that I experienced when growing up, I started to cope with alcohol specifically. And actually, that was probably the substance that led to some of the more challenging times. But it just was a way for me to overcome that challenge. But now, like in the last 8 years being in recovery, being able to do that and face those fears, like my mantra for this year in part is like to be fearless. And I think we have to show up, right? And we have to be willing to put ourselves outside of that comfort zone. And that encourages growth. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. I would even, not to dog on your mantra. when I hear that, right, like to be fearless, I'm like, that's crap. I see it more like you're always going to have fear. You're never going to be fearless, but can you stand in your fear? Like, right. Can you get to that moment? Because that's how I convinced myself, man. Like, when it came to choice, it was, I'm terrified of this. Like, terrified to the point where this is the thing that I wanted to kill myself over. And it's not about me. And that fear is always going to be there. Because, like, I think about presenting now, you know, and it's always, always, always going to be there.
Absolutely. And that so is sadness and hardships and challenges and struggles. You know what I mean? So when I say fearless, it is one of those things where it's a reality of that you're facing those fears on a consistent basis.
Right.
The fearless, you know, conversation okay. comes into you have to be willing to be fearless in the senses of like facing those challenges, right? So not in this idea, mm-hmm. like I don't live a world where I'm like, I'm going to be happy every single day, all the time. But I can find joy in my heart. I can find a great sense of gratitude that helps to support that joy. But happiness is kind of up and down, right? So those are the things mm-hmm. where if you are living in comfort, you kind of become complacent, right? And then I think that's where you don't want to face that fear of maybe going out and getting a new job, just like you stated in the early part of this conversation, or continue to put 100% in the choices in recovery. Like, that is scary all on its own. And that is a huge challenge that you have to face on a daily basis, whether it's because of our personality or because of past struggles or just where we're at today kind of thing. Even fear of failure. I mean, that in part is probably instilled in every single person around the world, for that matter. With that, I mean, thank you for sharing your story. I think it's great that there are more people talking about the things that have worked for them. Like, all pathways of recovery, this is what helped me get over those challenges. This is how I'm being healthier today. And, you know, now we're able to, like, meet people where they're at. And looking at even a better drinking culture, for example, is a conversation that is up and coming, especially with our youth. And I think it is, in part, absolutely crucial. Because if we're going to say one pathway is the only pathway, well, I don't know. Is that even really something that we should be upholding or lifting up? Because we live in a world of options, first of all. So, like, we're conditioned, especially the upcoming next generation is conditioned to have options. And if we get into a situation where we need help and they're like, this is the only option, and that option doesn't work for you, that doesn't mean like something's wrong with you or something's even wrong with that program. But maybe there's something else that you can take a look at. So can you tell me a little bit more about your dedication with your project, Choices in Recovery? Or Choice in Recovery, I'm sorry.
I'm like, if I hear Choices one more time.
See, this is what happens when I do back-to-back interviews.
Can you clarify that question? What do you mean by my dedication?
Yeah, so what is Choice in Recovery? What is your mission?
Okay, cool. So our mission is to unite the many pathways to recovery and educate the public and professionals in the field about the options that they do have. And it's like, coming off of what you just said, that conversation, that hopelessness that occurs if that's the situation where, say, they go to a meeting and they're just like, wow, like this, I can't click with this. Like, the words don't work. This doesn't work. The people in the room, like, stuff like that. Like, what if you are an individual that is told, like, you have to go here and this is the way to do it, and then you show up and you're like, oh, wow, like, that didn't resonate. And so, like, our mission is really to change that conversation. And when it initially started, the presentations were geared towards the general public. And as we've gone on, what has become, like, extremely clear is that it's professionals in the field that are making those referrals, that are sending those individuals to those programs that might not work for them. And that's where the conversation needs to change, is we can't say to somebody, hey, you have to go here. Like, this is our process. You have to go here. It's, hey, you have all these options. Choose one. And there are a bunch of options. Like, I don't even have all of them. And if somebody shows up then and doesn't like the meeting or the language or whatever it is, it's like, cool, let's check the other eight that we have on board. Let's do something different. And it even could be my story where, you know what, I'm not down with meetings. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
What can I do personally? Because I think that's actually something that we so often ignores the idea that there are so many people out there that got to where they're at, and, man, they didn't even attend one meeting. But I still think it's important to know that the different meetings are out there because, like, and I hope I'm not changing the topic too much. When I think about my personal story, it took me, honestly, like, not 8 or 9 years to get to where I did, right? And that's because the only language I had in my head was this idea that I am powerless to something. And for me, that didn't resonate. For me, that had me live in a very, very dark reality. But then having heard about moderation management now and this idea that there are programs designed for people that are problem drinkers and we're trying to keep them from becoming chronic drinkers, and there's different, like, words that are used, and there's this idea that moderation can actually be attained. I don't know if I ever would have gone to a moderation management meeting. Like, I will never say that, well, for sure, if I knew about MM, I would have gone. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. But I think the idea of even knowing that those words were out there, that this possibility was out there, that I could use different language, that could have took it, like, that could have potentially taken 5 years instead of 9, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
I hope I answered.
No,
that's
really good. I want people to get an idea of why this is important. So, I mean, ultimately, choice in recovery. You have a mission, you know, to basically unite the many pathways of recovery and provide the resources out to the community, even in front of professionals. So you can talk about things like 12-step programs. You can talk about other programs that work for people like Smart Recovery or Moderation Management or Women for Sobriety. What does that conversation really look like when you get that in front of people? I mean, I would agree with you that there is a general kind of feeling that 12-step is the only step, you know, in recovery kind of thing. And I know, like, some of these conversations can be really uncomfortable with people. It can even upset people. Have you seen that before, or is it well received? And what happens when you put this panel together?
So in terms of, like, is it well received, when this panel is actually out there and these individuals, and, man, I have to commend them because every one of these individuals, one, they're giving their time for free just to, you know, facilitate their program on a weekly basis, and then they show up for us during these panel discussions that take about 2.5 hours. But when you sit down representatives from these different programs, I think just seeing that and seeing that these people can unite in such a way, I think it actually makes it it creates a space where there isn't as much pushback anymore. Like, when I have those individual conversations that I had in order to get to this place, there was a ridiculous amount of pushback. The first event that we ever held at, it was at a Natural Grocers here in Colorado. Sounds super weird, but they give you space for community projects.
Mm-hmm.
I had a conversation with somebody that was going to represent 12 steps like a week before the panel. And that, like, those were the hardest conversations for me to have, is when somebody is so passionate about their program that they can't necessarily accept a different pathway. And that's where the pushback was in those kind of one-on-one conversations. And she told me, like, don't talk about the fact that you moderate, don't, you know, because I'm worried about you and all this stuff. And I'm like, look, this is how it started. I told him, like, moderation management is on the panel right there. Mm-hmm. And that first event was ridiculous. I mean, it's funny how things lined up, because it started off with the person representing, speaking on behalf of kind of 12 steps, was the first speaker. And the speaker right after her was our representative for moderation management. And I promise you, I didn't set it up that way. They all sat down in front of the room the way that they sat down in front of the room. And the conversation from the individual that was representing 12 steps actually transformed within those 2 hours.
Hmm.
Because she began with 12 steps, 12 steps, 12 steps. And by the end of the panel discussion, we're hearing recovery, recovery, recovery.
Nice.
And then she actually hooked me up with a chairman from Narcotics Anonymous who could represent Narcotics Anonymous. And the pushback is there, and it doesn't, for me personally, it doesn't affect me as much when it comes to looking at how, like, the professionals in the field accept the conversation. I don't know if I've been lucky, but it's gone over very well. Like, the results that we get and the data that we collect and the comments that I get to read is, like, this information needs to be out there. I walked in here, I didn't know about these programs, And now I'm glad I can refer clients to different programs. But so that's there. But I also have to be clear that the professionals that I've had in the room, I mean, they came from like Denver Health, or they came from, they were just professionals tied into the Office of Behavioral Health Network. So I can't say that they are coming from treatment centers that only utilize 12 steps. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if an individual is from a treatment center that only utilizes 12 steps, necessarily what their reaction would be. But on a personal level, when it comes to speaking to counselors that actually want to run a client-centered business or practice, excuse me, the reaction has been positive.
Excellent. Excellent. So in part, kind of breaking down maybe even some social barriers and addressing culture within the recovery community, and even from a professional community standpoint, which I think is paramount to the change that needs to take place all across the country. I mean, if you really take a look at the support groups that are out there or the current recovery support services all across the board, we definitely need more of, but there also are some great things out there, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't know about them. So even being publicly aware that these things are available are absolutely crucial, and having a multitude of options that you can take a look at can help serve you in different ways, whether you're a person that's seeking recovery or in recovery, or has been in recovery even for a long time. Even for me, over the last 8 years, my recovery pathway has changed, and that has been in accordance with like my growth, my development, and you know, even just maturing and finding, you know, value out of certain things at different points in my life for different reasons. And that is probably the same for every individual. Now, some support groups, people find great support with them long term, and that is the only support group they look at, and that's fantastic. I think the real cool conversation, in, if I like bring it down, is you get a chance to not necessarily create an opportunity where people can say who's better than what, but more like this is how this has worked, and it may work for you, and it's also okay to use it with other programs.
Totally. And that's actually, when it comes to running a choice and recovery event, when we do have a representative from the various pathways on the panel, when it like when I organize that, I'm actually very strict, I would say, with my representatives in terms of how they speak about their pathway. And because I definitely, we never want to have one just highlighted, and we never want to have something that one individual says to discredit somebody else. So I have them actually speak from, this is what works for me. We only talk about what works, right? Because if you say something like, oh, well, I didn't really like it when I just had to hear one person speak and I couldn't respond, you know, when we're talking about meetings where there aren't, where crosstalk isn't present, then all of a sudden the person that's sitting on that panel who represents the meeting where crosstalk isn't present is like, uh-oh, you know, that kind of addresses me. And so it really is just to look at what works. And giving people the choice to be like, okay, you know what, the words that this guy just used, I think those would work for me, or those would work for my client and stuff like that. So it really is like it is a social thing. And something that you said in there was, you know, that these resources are out there and that we are just trying to educate people on what those are. And when Choice started, I was actually just trying to create my own program at the beginning, where I'm like, moderation works for me. There's got to be like some way that I could create this to work for others. And I actually didn't have to do anything. I had to just have the person that actually does this sit on the panel. And what you also said was like this idea of potentially even attending multiple meetings. Our representative for LifeRing actually came from moderation management. He went through moderation management for a while, utilized that program. Didn't really work out, whatever the case was, and now he represents LifeRing. And so it's really, even they have those like interconnections within the panel.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, even I look at my lived experience. In the beginning, I went to meetings all the time. And today, I have a little bit more of a self-directed program. And I focus on different holistic aspects of my life. And it works really well for me. And maybe tomorrow it'll change, you know. But I think knowing what's out there has made a world of difference. And actually, I wanted to ask, especially for our audience, whether it is a parent chiming in or if it is a community leader that cares about this, you know, addiction awareness, you know, conversation, or even if more importantly, I think if somebody's looking for help, we do use this as a resource. So can you maybe give a little bit about some of the different types of pathways to recovery, like what they are, just maybe like two sentences, maybe like smart recovery, or I know we talked about moderation management, but and you even mentioned like Phoenix Multisport and a couple others like LifeRing. Can you get a little information mm-hmm. about that?
Totally. So I honestly had to type them all out, like in terms of the programs that we have involved, just in case I just brain farted. So moderation management, I'll just start exactly how it's listed in my phone at this point. So moderation management, that one's designed for problem drinkers, right? So it's not designed for somebody that is a chronic user, which isn't to say, honestly, that a chronic user hasn't sat down in the meeting and had moderation management change their life, right? But it is designed for problem drinkers, and how they address that is through the mindfulness piece. You know, you go to the meeting weekly or however it is scheduled in your community, and it is looking at how does alcohol impact your life and, like, what are triggers and stuff like that. And the thing I really like about moderation management is that they require a 30 days abstinence period, and so you cut it out for 30 days to really look at how alcohol impacts your life and what hobbies are you missing out on, how can you fill your time differently and stuff like that. So that's that one, and they only address alcohol, period. So when we say moderation management, some people freak out. They're like, oh, you can't moderate heroin, or you can't moderate this.
Yeah.
It's like, right, moderation management is designed specifically for alcohol use.
So more like a healthier lifestyle, right? I mean, we're talking about drinking better, live healthier, that kind of like slogan or mentality, you know, just a healthier lifestyle in general around alcohol.
Yeah, and they give you guidelines.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they also give you guidelines around it. So because you think about moderation, like, well, how do you know, how do I know if I'm really moderating? And they're like, well, for females, it's this amount of drinks in one occasion and this amount over a week span. For males, it's this amount of drinks. So it's like there are real numbers as to what moderation looks like. So it's not just like up in the air, I don't really know, but I feel good about it. It's like, no, like you can only have this amount over this like span of time. And then with Phoenix Multisport, so they are really like an active, sober community. And I totally tie with them because their whole thing is exercise and being like, I mean, snowboarding, rock climbing, CrossFit, stuff like that, and just a group of people that come together so they can be active. And they, I'm pretty sure they even say, like, you know, that they aren't there to replace a support group. So a lot of times they will recommend that you, you know, attend a Phoenix Multisport event and also continue attending whatever other support group you attend. I would venture to say that there are a lot of people that just utilize Phoenix Multisport. It connects them with people that want to do other things that aren't drinking or using drugs, you know.
So kind of like pro-social activities,
recovery,
physical fitness, those kind of things.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And our rep that sits on the Choice panel, something that he said was like, yeah, I was just like really like tired of showing up to meetings with a bunch of old people, and I'm like the young person in the room, and I don't want to sit here and talk about stuff. Like, I just want to do stuff. And he was an active dude, and he found a group of people that were sober and active, and so that was his support, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
Here, the next one is Smart Recovery. So, Smart Recovery, I'll just also mention this. So, moderation management, obviously not abstinence-based. Phoenix Multisport is abstinence-based. Smart Recovery, also abstinence-based, and they utilize like the power of choice. So, you're looking at why do I make these choices? How can I make better choices? So it's very much like, even though you are with a group of peers, it's still like a very self, like empowering group, I would say.
Yeah.
And also abstinence-based, but they use different words to attain that. And then LifeRing, which I believe actually stemmed from 12 Steps, is a secular group. And what they like talk about is the sober self and the addictive self. So the philosophy there is the more conversations that you have with the sober self, the stronger that part of you gets. And so when you're at a meeting, I mean, that's the conversation that you're having. And again, they also look at like your individual stuff and what empowers you and everything like that, similar to Smart Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And then Women for Sobriety, so that group in the name, that's for women. So you have to be a woman to attend. And it is also abstinence-based. So sobriety in the end there. And I love this group also, I love all the groups, but like Women for Sobriety uses empowering statements for women. So I've attended one meeting to go with a friend's mom, and they like start off their meetings with, I am a competent woman. And I am a responsible woman. And it's looking at very empowering language to empower these women to make those appropriate decisions to continue attaining their sobriety or to finally attain their sobriety and stuff like that.
I love that. That's cool.
Now we have Narcotics. Yeah, we have Narcotics Anonymous on board as well. And, that was very clear. We were following the 12 steps. I don't know all the 12 steps. I have not attended. I've attended once for, like, research stuff.
Yeah.
But again, a 12-step-based program. And then you have the Boulder's Collegiate Recovery Center. They supported us immediately. And I think we got their support because they are dealing with a younger population. So I believe you mentioned somewhere like we're looking at different generations right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe a 12-step meeting doesn't really align with a younger individual who's in college. And the CUCRC isn't necessarily like just a program that you attend or anything like that, but it is a huge resource on CU Boulder's campus that students can go to where they can connect with other individuals that, are in recovery or just want to reduce their drinking or whatever the case is. And it's such a safe space. We always joke about it, but the lighting in that room is just like you walk in and you just want to meditate. The lighting is amazing.
Yes.
That is just a huge resource for students, and it's a thing that's finally coming up. It's kind of ridiculous how long it's taken to get something like that on a college campus, and I believe it is the only one in Colorado, if not one of two, maybe, mm-hmm. But it was the first one in Colorado.
Nice.
And then two more. Then I have a representative for harm reduction, and that is, if an individual is going to use, how do we reduce the harm that is associated with their use? So, again, this isn't like a place that you show up as, like, in terms of a meeting, but, they have a clean needle exchange program. They also educate on how to prevent overdose and everything like that. And I had the chance to kind of just tour the Denver Center here, and it was amazing to see how much more they do than what I thought. I thought it was just, okay, you provide clean needles, and that's not the case. They provide a lot of education. They provide a safe space. They provide soap. They provide shampoos. They're always taking donations for stuff like that, where they are just trying to help these individuals that are using live with dignity, and they're mm-hmm. trying to prevent disease and trying to keep these people alive. Then the last rep that we have is a rep for medication-assisted treatment.
Okay.
And this is one where I have a really awesome question come up for, and somebody said, you're dealing with, like, all this recovery stuff, and then you have somebody that represents treatment on the panel. Like, mm-hmm. And I never even thought about that, when I had them come onto the panel. I never even thought about the fact that we have treatment in the name, and I kind of had to respond on the spot, and my response to that was, totally true. This is somebody that is representing a treatment modality, but I see every treatment is, at the end of the day, a pathway to recovery, and with medication-assisted treatment specifically, the way that I approached that was, this is a pathway that is extremely stigmatized. That can also save a lot of lives. And that's when I was like, that's why they're on the panel, because they're stigmatized and they are, at the end of the day, a pathway to recovery.
Yeah. And we see a lot of that, well, really
that
all over the country. No, that's fine. But even the assisted medicated treatment, and we're talking about, the world of Vivitrol and methadone and Suboxone and, those kind of assisted medicated programs. And I get asked about that a lot, because there is a lot of stigma that surrounds that form of treatment. And when I take a look at, the overall addiction epidemic, how many people are losing, just like harm reduction, we're ultimately trying to save lives. And if you have a program that works, that helps to get that that person to a cleaner place, a healthier place, and, maybe that is the first step for them. Maybe that's the first pathway that they take. And maybe that leads to many other pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think...
Mm-hmm.
In all reality, is more what we should be focusing on is what can we offer and not what is the best or I mean, some people have different viewpoints about it. It can be like trading one addiction for the other. But I believe if you have a place that is actually providing even treatment with that further treatment, whether it's inpatient or outpatient, that can really help that treatment be more successful, right?
Totally. And like with, because I honestly, I didn't even know about much about medication-assisted treatment until we had a panelist, you know, join the organization. And I had a call with her, and I'm like, how do you address all of these questions? Like, what is the pushback that you get? And that, like, even what you said, oh, well, you're just replacing one form of addiction with another form of addiction. You're still using, da-da-da-da-da. And it was just like, her responses were so on point, obviously, because they get that pushback. But even to, like, just address that statement right there, you're replacing one addiction with another, it is not easy to, like, attain the medicine that they're attaining. Like, they are required to also have a counseling session. They are required to come into the building, like, on a weekly basis. It's not like they just get all this stuff and carry it home and, great, like, now I get to abuse it. I mean, they are tested. They're made sure they're at the right level. They're trying to reach a therapeutic dose. Like, there's actually a lot of restriction for an individual that is utilizing medication-assisted treatment. And, like, even to hit on what you were saying, too, about, like, you just kind of have to accept it's a different pathway for a different person. I'm like, I oversee, essentially, these programs. And I have my own opinions as well, and I have to swallow those opinions. Mm-hmm. And know that it's never about me, and it's never about where I think somebody should go. It's about that individual being empowered to actually choose that. And it is about saving lives. Like, even when I talk to the panelist that represents medication-assisted treatment, and she tells a story about how she even got into that form of treatment, and her thing was, she's like, I know so many individuals who's lost their lives, like, from her previous background. She's like, I know so many individuals who lost their lives that I so firmly believe that if they had medication-assisted treatment, they would be around today. And that's how I take it. Because I'm like, yeah, I'm like, oh, well, why don't, you know, be more mindful. Don't use anything. Da-da-da-da-da. Whatever opinions I have don't matter. At the end of the day, those individuals are gone because they didn't have this option. And it's not on any of us to say which option anybody should go to, you know?
Absolutely. You know, even some of the things that we constantly say, whether it's on the show or just offline, look, what works for me might not work for you. And that's okay, right? I know, like, I've had conversations with people that are on MAT, and that did not work for them at all. But I also know people like my cousin and my mom that it helped to save their life over the last couple of years. So for me, that worked for them. And I can understand how it can work for other people. And I also can understand how it can be a challenge. But either way, if we limit those options, but then we limit the people to even find recovery in the first place, whether it's complete sobriety or moderation, or no matter what that looks like, you know, are we really supporting those individuals along their entire lifeline? And then it almost, like, when you start talking about resources, and whether it's a public panel setting like you do, or you even start looking at peer services, recovery coaches, peer support specialists, those types of individuals, part of their job is kind of like a resource manager. And being aware of these programs would be absolutely crucial to that person's job or position or role with that individual that's in or seeking recovery. So more than ever, whether it's online or in the streets, quote unquote, these resources need to be in the top of people's minds as they suggest something that might be helpful for that young person or somebody that is struggling with the disease of addiction, or maybe even struggling with other things. There's all kinds of different support groups. I mean, think about any other social disease. There's all different types of support for the family, for the individual, and for the professional. And I think the recovery movement is helping to push a lot of that forward into the same direction.
Totally. And that's where we decided to kind of transition from hitting the general public to actually looking more at professionals in the field, you know, recovery coaches or certified addictions counselors, people that are, like, it blows my mind that somebody would graduate from a university with a specialization in addictions counseling, and all they know about is 12-step, you know, and that is, like, such a big issue. And, yeah, with recovery coaches, I even did a recovery coach training. I was a participant, and it was a very, like, innovative program where they talked about the many pathways and meeting the individual where they're at. But what they didn't talk about is, like, well, shoot, what are the many pathways? You know, like, what if the individual is at this idea that, yeah, I really want to learn to moderate, but the recovery coach doesn't know about moderation management? And that's a big gap. Like, honestly, like, it's great to know that I don't have to sit around and create programs. That was an awesome thing. But the gap is so big between a professional in the field, whether they're a recovery coach, they're a licensed professional counselor, they're just graduating from university, and they're all stepping in, and they have this quote-unquote client-centered practice mentality, and mm-hmm. they actually can't meet the client where they're at. They right. can't do it because they don't have the information, you know? And that's, yeah, I'm glad we're moving in that way, and I'm glad that there's definitely a shift and an acceptance for the many pathways, and that's the thing that keeps me tied in as long as I have been. You know, like, I quit a lot. I mean, I've quit my personal training business. I've quit things. And when I think about choice, I'm like, I'm not at a place. Like, we are not at a place where we can quit that conversation. We have to continuously transform it and make it digestible and do it this way or that way for this audience or that audience until something clicks where it's like, man, it's widely known. You know, and that's, I think, where we're at is, like, we're looking for that moment for that click.
Yeah. I believe there's a tipping point that is about to happen. I'm not exactly sure when it will be, but I do know deep down in my heart, like, education awareness or creating a high amount of awareness on a multitude of levels, addressing community culture in many different atmospheres, if you will, whether it's professionals or church communities or schools or public panels or in traditional media or social media even, sharing maybe lived experience is one thing, but also sharing resources is another thing that is absolutely needed. I mean, I think about a world where you can actually go to a website and easily navigate those resources, get engaged with them, and actually be able to provide helpful, support for anybody that is looking for, no matter what age they are, right? So I know for me, like with Rise Together, mm-hmm. if my children ask for help today, it's very likely that they won't receive it. And that's not okay. That's not okay for mm-hmm. me as a father. You know what I'm saying? But I think we are moving mm-hmm. into the direction where with education and awareness is starting to eliminate some of that stigma around addiction and mental illness. You're able to talk about more options, provide more resources. People are more comfortable around that conversation. So when those people are ready to engage, they can be empowered, in short, with those resources.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that then. What are you going to do over the next year to help make that happen with your program? I know we talked about what it is to some extent. We talked about all pathways to recovery. You even were able to share a little bit of your own personal background. But what is your plan over the next year or so with Choice in Recovery?
So... my most immediate thing that's happening is that we launched a Kickstarter at the end of December last year to create a video that actually highlights the representatives that we have on board from these programs and highlights the many pathways to recovery. And I did that extremely impulsively, mm-hmm. which is just how things get done in my world. I mean, it's an ebb and flow, you know, like running an organization, trying to make an idea real and putting it out there. And I was kind of at the lower end of that, where I just kind of got to a point where I'm like, I don't even know how long I can keep doing this, and I don't know how it's going to work. And I was overwhelmed by, like, a fantasy of fears, right, of things that aren't even occurring right now, but that are big enough in my head to stop me. And to be, like, totally transparent, like, the kind of approach that I'm using right now is, if I were to quit, would I feel okay? If I were to leave this now, would I feel okay? And the answer for the last almost, like, 3 years has always been no. Like, mm-hmm. at first I was super motivated. I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then I got to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm just totally really sick of doing this. And yet I constantly transform the conversation in my head to keep it moving forward. And so when it came to this Kickstarter, it was, if I were to walk away from Choice right now, would I be okay with it? And again, that freaking loud voice was, no, people don't know about it. And so I honestly don't know where that Kickstarter is going to take us, but that Kickstarter is going to be huge. And we did successfully get it funded. We actually got it, I think it was like 117% funded, so we were over what we were asking for. Our videographer flies out to Colorado at like February, I think February 22nd. She's flying out here. We bought the ticket. And we're going to take basically the conversation that you and I are having and break that down into a short video that we can just make public and get the information out there. And for me, that's where all my focus is right now, is how do we capture these programs? How do we have this conversation? And how do we make it visually appealing and digestible for the public? Because as focused as I have it on my end as an organization of, we need to get this information to professionals, our end result is the people have to know. Like, we only are going through professionals because it's an effective way to get it to the people, but it's also not fast enough, at least for me. And so this Kickstarter is like, that is, I think the Kickstarter is the tangible tipping point right now. It's like, that's the thing where we're going to just capture it all and throw it out there and have it be public, and it's free and anybody can use it and they can have it and they can show their clients, like, whatever it is, it's not monetized, it's something we want to give away. And that for me is honestly, like, that's the furthest I could even look.
Yeah, that no, that is, and that's before. A long,
that's
a far distance though. Like, I get, we kind of are in the same playground in some senses, from like a community initiative to spread public awareness or a great public service. And I do honestly, friends, even friendship aside, but as professionals, like, I want to thank you for that public service that you're dedicating to your community and potentially all across the country, maybe even beyond. I mean, to be able to provide this development of real content that is humanized and digestible, that can be used in communities that absolutely need it for free or for whatever the service arrangement may be, I think that is a huge step forward. Even if it seems minimal at the time, we live in this world of reality where we can talk about all the statistics, we can talk about, you know, all the, you know, different amount of changes that may need to take place to help, like, take care of our people kind of conversation, but we are in a world where we need more awareness, more momentum, and need to continue to build off the momentum that is currently has happened over the last, you know, 10 years and really push it forward. And people like you are going to help make that happen. So I just want to thank you.
No, thank you for the acknowledgement, too. And it's definitely, it's funny. I mean, I bring it up to some people, and it's just like, well, how are you going to monetize it? How? And I'm just like, man, at some point, don't.
Like, at some some point, things aren't so logical. Not, yeah.
Like, I mean, I care about it. Like, if I'm, yeah, I mean, I want to get paid for choice. I want to, you know, have this thing nationally. I want to be paid to be a speaker. I want to be paid to be a writer. That's like, that's all there. And alongside that is, what is the mission? Is it being fulfilled? And how do you get it fulfilled? And is that monetized? Like, to a certain degree. Sure, I'm getting, you know, I will be paid for creating this video. Is it monetized to the degree that it could be? Heck no. And it's not the point at the end of the day, you know? And so, no, I definitely appreciate the acknowledgement, and I needed to hear it, and I need to, especially when you said what it seems like such a little thing, like, yeah, some days, most of the days, I'm like, oh, I'm not doing enough. And I will be straight, like, every day, I'm like, for sure, I'm not doing enough. And then when I have to look back and think about, holy crap, I just overfunded a Kickstarter. And, like, that money wasn't thrown in. That took work every single day. And that took promotion every single day to make sure the numbers were hit. And then it's like, we're on this Thursday, actually, I totally want to share this. This Thursday, since starting that Kickstarter, you know, when you mentioned, you know, maybe it'll be a local thing, it could go national. Since starting that Kickstarter, I have been in communication with the executive directors of Smart Recovery.
Nice.
Of LifeRing, of, you know, with higher-ups of Moderation Management, with Women for Sobriety, and Smart Recovery, I got to say, in particular, I mean, they're, and it's totally a social thing, it's Facebook, doesn't sound like a big deal, but I'm coming onto this Facebook page for Choice to Recovery, and I'm seeing, like, Smart Recovery New York sharing our Kickstarter, I'm seeing Smart Recovery this state sharing, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's already getting out there, and it's already doing things, and so, like, I have to hear, like, no, you're doing something, because in my head, I'm like, great, I did a Kickstarter, and now I just have this phone call. But then I think about it, and I'm like, no, this is like a really phenomenal phone call that's going to happen.
That's so cool. And
well,
it's good.
Thank you
it's
again.
Yeah, it's good to hear you laugh too. And I know there can be some, it's a hard grind sometimes, you know, to be out there and trying to put together public panels and put together the right pieces and, you know, look at your strategic planning and being like a business entrepreneur. I think there's this like false reality that's out there, like everything is going to be really good all the time because you get to work for yourself kind of thing. But it is also really difficult. Mm-hmm. As much as it can be very enjoyable, there are hard times for any business. And when you take a look at what we're trying to accomplish, it is a very important subject matter. We're trying to, in part, save lives. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to provide education, public service, and we're trying to educate, you know, tens of thousands of people across the country to help change their lives, to help support lives, to help, you know, change families, right? I mean, think about mm-hmm. how this could impact in a positive way just families alone. If anything, I think the most consistent question that I have come in, whether it's email or social media or just even Facebook or even text messages or calls, is I know somebody that needs help. Where do I go? What is out there?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is some great resources that I can provide to them. But a lot of times people just don't know. And that's a huge step forward to be able mm-hmm. to go back to that loved one, provide them some options. And I know there's many cases where they consider those options, they take some of them in, and some of those people are living and breathing today. And that's what it's all about.
Totally. And like that, even looking at the Kickstarter, and when I was in that very short thinking span of, am I launching this kind of thing or not? And I had a conversation with a friend, and I'm talking to her, and she's talking to me about her fiance, and, you know, I want to help him, and, you know, his drinking looks like this, and it's impacting the relationship, and, you know, all that stuff. And then I start talking to her more about my story. I mean, like, we've been friends since college, and she still doesn't, you know, she still didn't know my full story, and I start talking about my story, and I bring up moderation management, and she's just like, what? Like, moderation what? There's a program for this? And I'm like, yeah. And, you know, hearing her talk about her fiance, it's like, he is clear he doesn't want to quit drinking. That's in his language. He is clear he doesn't want to quit. He's also clear that there's an impact to his level of drinking, and he wants to learn to moderate. And she had no idea that she could even say moderation management. And I ended up meeting up with him, and he ended up going to a meeting like the following week. And it's like, there, that is the conversation. When you create something even so little as a 6-minute video, it's like, it was her, you know, it was like that conversation where I'm like, this is why we have to do this, because it's almost ridiculous mm-hmm. that we have to continuously have these one-on-one conversations. Like, these things are there. How do people not know? And it's, I mean, it's clear how they don't know, but they should.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because that information isn't being provided, and that's the conversation that we continuously have to address.
Yeah. I mean, I think of other public service messages that are out there, like drugs over dinner. You know, they have a great public service, pretty simple, great platform to help create conversations around the dinner table about drugs and alcohol. Having a healthy conversation right mm-hmm. at home, and it's more of a preventative message supporting youth, but it's a build, very well done, digestible, humanized, to some extent conversational anyways, and that's mm-hmm. it. That's what the strategic focus was just to create that public service and allow people to use it. And we use it as a resource once mm-hmm. in a while to parents. And, you know, this in part would be something similar to that. And so if people want to go ahead and support you in this awesome cause and these efforts, how can they do that?
So right now, the biggest thing, and I've thought about that question when I was trying to prepare for this. I was like, oh, gosh, I don't have like a really awesome answer, but it is what it is. So right now we're still developing the website, so we don't have like a website that anybody can hit up, but we do have our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/choiceandrecovery. So liking that page is huge. Like, basically increasing the amount of people that our information is hitting is our biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing too is in developing the website, one of the things that we would like to have on the website are stories of individuals in terms of, like, their pathway to recovery. And so another thing that people can do is email me directly at choiceandrecovery.gmail. How does an email work? Choiceandrecovery@gmail.com.
How does the email work?
Submit a... yeah, I'm like, I know it's not .gmail because that's sounds like a website. but, yeah, I mean, if people want to email us, like send in your story, and once our website is up, then there will be a link, you know, on that website to actually submit via that. But we want to share these different stories, and it doesn't even, you don't even have to identify as being in recovery. Like for me, I actually don't say I'm in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an advocate. I'm all this stuff. I'm a form of, like, a resource, whatever you want to say. But I think even those stories are important. We're like, this is what my use used to look like. This is what it looks like now. I don't identify, but like, I want my story out there. And so that's the thing that we want to do, is we really want to capture voices, and we want to empower people to share what their stories are. And so that's the other way to support us, and that's the other way that I see as, like, to kind of support yourself and support your own voice, is share what it was for you and share what it is for you now, and let us make that public. So sending an email to that, choicetorecovery@gmail.com. Oh my gosh, still not using an email, right? No, that is right, isn't it?
Yeah, you can.
Anthony, help me out. How does Gmail work?
@gmail.com. So you're good. So, I mean, if anybody out there, it is Choice in Recovery, not Choices in Recovery or anything else that I may have said at the beginning of this call. Don't worry. We're public speakers. We do this all the time. But it's Monday. It's like that grind early in the week. But no, go to Choice in Recovery.
Right.
You can find them on Facebook. You also can find them at Gmail, as mentioned. Also, if people want to go ahead and donate some of their hard-earned cash, you know, to your cause for the Kickstarter, how can they do that? Is that right on the Facebook as well?
Unfortunately, they can't. Actually, you know what? I need to look into that more.
Yeah.
So our Kickstarter is done. So we did a 30-day thing, so you had 30 days to donate, and after that, you can still accept donations. I think they just don't go directly through Kickstarter, so
okay.
I would say if you want to do that, I would just email us as well.
Okay,
and
cool.
I will look into the logistics of what that looks like.
Because you guys, I mean, did a phenomenal job. It looked like you had over 50 different, backers. You exceeded, like you said, raised enough money, exceeded expectations, and continue to push this public service forward. So congratulations, round of applause, all that high fives over the microphone kind of thing. I think that is awesome, because I know those things can be super hard to do. You know what I mean? We've tried, like, GoFundMe before, mm-hmm. and, you know, those things can be cumbersome, to say the least. So it's awesome that you're getting support and people believe in it, especially from even an executive level, having individuals that are helping to oversee these programs nationally come and support your efforts. And I think that is a response to how important education and awareness is. So anybody that's out there listening, you know, Irina would love your support. I'd also love to hear your story. I think that's absolutely crucial. What do these pathways to recovery look like? Why was it important to you? How did it help you in your life? How is it helping today? People can look at a program or a brochure or go online and check out what they have on a website, but until somebody actually shares that lived experience with that program, there isn't as much motivation until that moment kind of takes place. You know, just like probably anything in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, at first you might be a little apprehensive, but once you start hanging around with people that actually have been at the program or that school or whatever you're talking about, you can be like, okay, I dig this. I like this. It worked for them. It might work for me. So please share your story. And then outside of that, I wanted to transition. I know we're kind of getting to the end of the call here, but we have, you know, a few minutes left. And just to kind of put you on the spot, I constantly hear themes with you talking about mindfulness, talking about all the things that you're learning as well, you know, all the different pathways of recovery. Can you leave us maybe with those, like, small, like, tips or pointers, or whether it's something that worked in your life or something that you know is working for somebody else, like how do you continue to face those fears? How do you continue to, you know, live the life that you have? Like, what is your practice? What do you think might work for other people? Like, because I'm also looking for advice too.
That is a loaded question.
It is. It absolutely is. It's a lot of questions. I want to make sure we just keep the conversation going. But no, it could be anything. It could be something small. Like, hey, look, I do a daily reflective journal every day. You know what I mean? And it really helps me to focus on what I'm grateful for, and also to help me address my self-esteem and find some positive affirmations. So I practice that on a daily basis. I just started to meditate over the last week. I enjoy it. And I'm going to continue to do that, and looking forward to get back to physical fitness. So those are three things that help me that might help somebody else. What about you?
Okay, cool. My biggest thing is for sure exercise is a really big thing for me. Again, that's how I put a lot of weight on that in terms of, like, I would say that saved my life. That saved my life. It continues to do so. Exercise is huge. That's honestly, even thinking about this interview, I was like, I have to get to a cycling class before I have a phone call today because I was nervous, and that's how I deal with my nerves. The other piece, too, meditation-wise, so I'm crazy. I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat here in Colorado. I hated every minute of it. It was 9 hours of meditation a day. And I just got really angry at the end of 10 days, which sounds like the opposite of what should happen, and it did happen. But this year, I have meditated every single day this year, and I've been using, it's a free app, it's called Insight Timer.
Okay.
And you have, you can either do like a little timer that goes off, or there's like a little gong or whatever bell you choose, and time however long you want to do it, and then another bell will go to let you know it's ended, or you can choose a guided meditation, and that's how I can tell you that I've meditated every single day this year is because I allowed myself to accept that maybe a guided meditation is something that I can use now. And then when I get to a point where I feel a little bit more at peace with sitting, then I can go into silence again. That's the other piece that keeps me moving forward. And then the third thing I would say is, especially when you're talking about fear, and you're talking about maybe even decisions, like when I think about, gosh, I just want to quit choice, you know, like I seriously have that conversation, and I have not quit. And what helps me a lot, and this comes from the personal and professional development program that I completed, was looking at reality in realistic terms, meaning what is the thing that's actually happening right now versus what is the story that I'm constantly saying about that thing. And I would take your fears, right? Like, even when I started Choice, I wrote an essay about all the fears that I had. And I took every single one of those fears, and I was like, is it real?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was no. For all the fears, the answer was no, this will not happen. No, this will not happen. Unless I let that fear be a reality, that is the only time the fear is real.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a constant practice, day-to-day practice. When I'm upset about something, when I don't want to do something, when I want to quit the new job that pays me a very good amount of money, like to do awesome stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I want to quit it, and I'm just like overwhelmed by my head, and it was just like, what is the thing? Oh, what is real is that I'm getting paid this amount of money an hour to do this thing, and the story that I'm making up is that this isn't what I should be doing, and it's not what it should look like, and da-da-da-da-da, and it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And so constantly diving into that and we as humans, that is just our thing. We make everything mean something. And we make things mean things that don't even exist in the present moment. And so it's constantly having that conversation of, why am I upset? What actually happened? What's the story that I continue telling myself that actually keeps me upset?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, the three, you know, categories that you listed out, you know, they're somewhat similar. We share some of those things, you know, in our life today. And I think a lot of other people do as well. You know, I run across people all the times, you know, I really am trying to find a better workflow balance, or maybe some mindfulness, or maybe some peace. Also want to spend some time with family and friends. And, you know, I'd like to be healthier in my life. I'd like to eat better, sleep better, you know, drink more water. Maybe I go to the gym. Maybe I'm on my bike. Or maybe I travel more. You know, all those things are important to outline, you know, as you get prepared, not only just for a new year like we are in 2017, but also just consistently throughout the year, you know, and what does that look like? And are you even pre-planning for that too? So just like you talked, I think that's important, like pre-planning when you need to, and just recognizing maybe some of the stress factors that you might have. Like, I don't know what it was about today, but before I got on the podcast interview that I did this morning, I was super nervous, and I've done a lot of public speaking. I've done a lot of podcast interviews. We do this show. I do it every single week. But it also helps me to realize that, like, I'm real. Like, I'm authentic. I'm, you know, it's good that I have that feeling, because that means I'm excited for it. So instead of, like, building all these negative connotations around it, like, oh man, I might mess up, or I might not say the right thing, or even on this podcast, like, might say the wrong thing, you know what I mean? But, you know, we're human, you know what I mean? We make mistakes all the time, and I think it's really cool that we can, you know, share this experience together and give it back to our community. And, you know, those are excellent tips, and of course we're going to go ahead and include them into the podcast details and episode notes. So we'll also go ahead and list Choice and Recovery, any links that were mentioned on today's show, plus all the Pathways to Recovery. We'll have some resource links for all that, plus more. So, Irina, I just want to thank you so much for being on this call. Thank you for being transparent. Thank you for being a friend, being supportive. Thank you for the public service. I mean, you really are doing some phenomenal things out there. I always believed in you, and it sounds like you believe in what you're doing. Just keep doing it.
Thank you. You got to. Once you start, you got to believe in what you're doing, or nobody else is gonna.
Right? There's like, you're gonna have to believe in it, right? So believe in yourself, believe in your program, continue to do what you do. I know it's helping to save lives, and again, just thank you so much, and I hope we can connect down the road.
For sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure we're connecting next week.
Yeah, monthly call, right? Right.
Just saying.
I only look a week
yeah,
ahead.
Thank you so much.
All right, Irina. Well, you have an awesome, awesome day. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk next week.